It's really hard to be a generalist over the whole country. What makes a whole lot more sense is for someone to really think about the people that they've helped historically, and to try and frame that person, think about them, even to imagine that person sitting in your in a room with you, of how you would talk to them and how you would explain what you do to that person for the first time, using the language that they'd understand, that they'd want to know.
Welcome to Good Enough Counsellors, the podcast for growing a private practice without the pressure to be perfect. I'm Josephine Hughes, counsellor and creator of Therapy Growth Group, helping you get the clients you want and create the practice of your dreams. So when was the last time you tried to find a therapist yourself? If you've ever tried to do it for a friend, a family member, or even out of curiosity, you'll know just how many names come up and how hard it can be to decide who to contact. And that's where today's guest is coming in. I'm joined by John Garrowell from Verum Design, who helps therapists build websites that not only look good, but actually get found. And I know that is a problem for many of you listening, is you create a website and then you say, I can't even find it on Google myself. John's a website designer, but he also knows a lot about SEO, and we'll explain what that is in a moment. The mysterious thing that we all hear about. And in this episode, we're going to explore why your website matters, what really helps people to find you online, and some small steps you can take to make your site work harder for you. If you'd like to go deeper, John has already shared a much more detailed session inside Therapy Growth Group, where we really explored this topic in depth. And you can also find out more about John and his work at verumdesign.co.uk, and I will pop that into the show notes if you would like to look John up. So John, before we get into SEO, can you tell us a bit about your own experience of trying to find a therapist?
Yeah, so going back a little bit further, I spent most of my career publishing magazines and publishing websites and working with writers and SEO people and techie people and marketeers, and that's where I get my marketing and website sort of expertise from. I fell out of that a little time before COVID, spent some time doing some different, very different things, and then found myself looking for a therapist. I thought it would be helpful. People close to me thought that it would be a good idea too. So I thought, yeah, okay, well, I will try this and I'll do this. I just found it so incredibly hard. I don't, even now, sort of looking back with hindsight, I'm not sure exactly what or whether I knew what I was looking for, but I sort of scribbled out some ideas and then just found it very hard. I was sort of faced with directories, ended up scrolling, it felt like dating apps, and just really, really, really hard to know. Everyone sort of seemed to blend together. For me, what happened is I was going through the directories, and then I liked my list, so I made a list of people that I thought were possible. I dismissed anyone who didn't have a website. That's probably a little bit about me and how I am. And then I started looking at their websites and started to try and understand which therapist that I felt that I may chime with. So the useful website was super important for me. And yes, I did find someone over that journey. That took me a couple of months probably to do that.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear that it took you that long, because I think a lot of us assume that people look at directories, choose someone and get in touch straight away. But it sort of sounds like, I think part of what happens is that you, when you're starting from scratch and you don't know what therapy is, and you don't really know what to look for, it takes quite a while, doesn't it, to know how to go about it.
And I think, again, from personal experience, it's quite hard reaching out for that first time. It takes quite a lot of sort of emotional courage and I think a well-designed website where you can connect with someone a little more and get to know them just takes you through that step and makes it a little bit easier to reach out.
Yeah. So what was sort of like, it was hard, was it, because there was just so much choice and you didn't really know what it was you were looking for?
So much choice, yeah. Hundreds, thousands of names, lots of different directories, hard to distinguish which ones were which one I should be looking at. Lots of ads for things like BetterHelp kept popping up. I was hearing about them in podcasts. And it was just, so much noise, really. That, you know, it's like looking for someone in Wembley Stadium. You're staring at hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of faces, and everyone's saying more or less the same thing.
Yeah. So when you found someone, what was it about them? You know, what was it, the look and feel of the website? You know, tell us a bit more about, you know, what spoke to you about the person you eventually chose.
It was the person rather than the website. I probably shouldn't say that as a website designer, but it was that person, and it was how they came across, how they explained people that they'd helped before, what they'd done. They talked a lot about the type of people that they'd worked with historically, and I felt, oh, this person sounds a little bit like me, or that sounds a little bit like me, and I felt a connection there. Left that website and then came back to it a few times, and then reached out and spoke to her, had a free chat, and then had another think probably for another couple of weeks.
Right, yeah.
And then got back to her and started some weekly sessions. And he was brilliant.
That's fantastic, isn't it? And I just think it's so interesting to hear about, you know, someone's journey of finding therapy, because we can make a lot of assumptions about how people find a therapist. But I think what's interesting is that also it was the person and how they spoke to you. And I know that's part of what you do when you're helping therapists with their websites, isn't it? Is helping them to think about who it is that they're trying to reach out to and how best to describe what they do. That's a big part of what you do, isn't it? You don't just create the website in the background, but you're actually helping people with marketing, I think, as well, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the therapists I work with and I speak to, their primary need is to attract more clients. Mm-hmm. And quite often the starting point is, I can help anyone. I just want more clients. You know, make my phone ring. Make people come in. Mm. It's really hard to be a generalist over the whole country. What makes a whole lot more sense is for someone to really think about the people that they've helped historically, to some degree, the people that they enjoy helping, people that where they've had the most success, where they've made that biggest difference, and to try and frame that person, think about them, even to imagine that person sitting in a room with you, of how you would talk to them and how you would explain what you do to that person for the first time, using the language that they'd understand, that they'd want to know. And then the other part of it, I guess, is the geography of it. So rather than thinking, I want to attract everyone and I want to appear on Google, whether it's in Scotland or whether it's in Cornwall, thinking about this is my area and I want to compete in this area. So for local search. So that then you're looking for the person you're best placed to help. So it's easier to connect with that person. And then rather than competing with tens of thousands of people, you're competing with a few hundred. And then it's much easier to stand out and connect with those right people.
It's really interesting to hear you say that. And we'll talk a little bit more about local search, I think, in a little while. I know we've got a lot of people who listen who perhaps haven't got to the stage yet of building a website. Do you think every therapist needs a website?
I'm sure no. I don't think every therapist needs a website. It depends what people are doing and what they're looking for. I speak to people that work as part of a practice, and they've got referrals coming in, and they've got a full diary. And if that's where people are, then layering up an extra website, not in all cases, but I would say in most parts, feels like just an extra expense that I don't think people need. And maybe this is slightly more controversial, because I know something like BetterHelp try and persuade therapists not to have a website, that everyone needs to do everything on their platform. But I do speak to people, and I've heard this story many times, of people going to BetterHelp and then Googling the therapist's name. And if you're working with BetterHelp, there's good things about it, but the fees that they pay certainly is not the good part of what they do. If they're Googling your name and they arrive at your website and they find that connection with you on your website, that can be really helpful for you as a therapist. And, and
you can work with them privately.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So let's move on and talk a little bit about SEO. Ostensibly, this is the reason why I asked you to come and talk. So can you explain what SEO is and why it matters to therapists?
So SEO is search engine optimization, which is a bit of a mouthful in, I think, in anyone's world. And I think anyone who has a website or has their name online, most of us, myself included, get inundated with spam emails promising that they're going to put us at the top of Google and our world is going to change from tomorrow and everything is going to be rosy forevermore. I'd urge any listener today really not to respond to those emails. I'm yet to hear a good story from one of those. But what is, I suppose, sort of rewinding slightly from that, a lot of people do find therapists via Google, some via the directories, some via BetterHelp and different things, some word of mouth. And a lot of people start with Google on their computer. They may have been given your name as a recommendation, and they may want to, they may type your name into Google. They might may type therapist near me, or more of that speciality stuff, but sort of anxiety therapist in Portsmouth, for example, and they need to find your website. If they type that in and they just see more directory listings, or even if they see your directory listing but with hundreds of other therapists, it's not super helpful. If they're looking for the specialty that you deliver in your area, or they Google your name, they need to find your website. That's essentially what SEO is about, helping people, helping you turn up near the top of Google so people find you, and that fills your diary.
But like you say, people treat it a bit like a sort of black art, don't they? And people make all these promises. But what sort of happens if someone is searching for like anxiety therapist in Portsmouth? What's going on in the background?
Wow. Okay. So Google has a tricky old job, really. There's over a billion websites out there, and you think of each website has many different pages. So it has billions of pages that it could show for that search query. So someone like me types into Google anxiety therapist in Portsmouth, and Google wants to serve the best page to answer that query. Mm-hmm. As you know, we all use Google. What people will be seeing is an AI result. They'll be seeing sponsored or advertisements from Google as well. Then they'll see a couple of different things which we want to talk about. The first one is a map, which will have usually three, but sometimes five different therapists by the side of it. That's your local search results. So Google's thinking, right, okay, this person is in this area and is looking for a therapist in this area, so we'll show them these results. Below that, you'll see more organic results that Google thinks are the best options, and that's, again, where you want your website to appear.
Yeah.
Very few people go onto page two.
Yeah, they see that. That's interesting. And one of the things that we did in Therapy Growth Group when you came and visited us was you suggested that we just go incognito and do a search in our local area, which I then did the next day. And it was so interesting to see the results, because as you described, you know, there were the adverts, then there was the map, and then there was someone who I didn't know about before. And I do sort of know quite a few people, local people in my area. So I had a little bit of a dig around to see why she was coming up so high in the results. And, you know, she was on Google My Business. She was on that map, but also she had a load of reviews. So she had about 32 reviews on her Google business page. And she had a very nice website as well. But I thought that was a really interesting result to look at, actually, because that was one of the things we talked about a little bit, wasn't it? And like you said, this could be the subject of a whole other podcast, couldn't it? The whole subject of reviews. But reviews do help, don't they?
Yes. I mean, that Google business profile is super important. There's way too many therapists that don't have a Google business profile set up. It's free to do. It's a service that Google offer. It does get a bit clunky, and it's sort of, you go through various different screens, but it's not that hard to set up. Then once you have that, you can upload bits of content, you can upload sort of different details about yourself that will help you get shown in the local search. And then almost the rocket fuel that goes underneath that is the reviews, which is a tricky subject for therapists. For lots of reasons. And as you said, Josephine, that you know, it could quite easily be another whole podcast about reviews. Yeah, the different bodies have different rules. There's, when I'm putting reviews on people's websites, I'm always very keen to anonymize every review and then also explain why it's anonymized. There's a couple of reasons why I do that. I think it's a good sort of standard to have. And then I think explaining it is important, that if someone is looking at the website and thinking, oh goodness me, I don't want my name up on this website, this person's not for me, and I think it enforces the ethics behind it, but we're still giving that social proof for reviews on our website.
Yeah, it's important, isn't it, for sort of confidentiality purposes. So, you know, a lot of the people who are you know, becoming therapists, who are setting up websites, you know, we're not technical. Not technical people. Can you give us some ideas about a few small practical things we could do? So obviously setting up the Google My Business page, because this is the local search, isn't it? And you think that's really important, don't you? What else could we do to sort of try and help ourselves? And I know I'm going to open up a huge subject here, but, you know, what are some of the small things that we can do to help our SEO along?
About the structure of your website. So think of, you know, the homepage should be connect with people emotionally. It should have enough content on it to give people an idea of who you are and what you do. It should be showing up for if someone says therapist in Portsmouth, and obviously you're a therapist and you're in Portsmouth, that's the page that Google should serve. So think about that person, think about how they might present themselves and create the content for that. The next page is your about page, which is your name. A lot of therapists are, I would say, a little shy about promoting themselves. They you know that they don't want to big themselves up. People will Google your name and your area, and your about page has to show up for that. That's probably the easiest search result for any therapist to win. You can be right at the top and people can find you for that. So make sure you've got a really, really good about page. The third, which comes, is sort of is scalable up, is your specialty pages. So if you specifically help people with grief, then you want a page that is called something like Grief Therapist in Portsmouth. I don't know why I keep picking on Portsmouth today, but that's where we are. And think about, you're starting with your ideal client. That's what all your content is prepared for. And think about the next step. So think about your ideal client. Think about how that client may present themselves, and how they present themselves is usually very similar to what they will type into Google. That's a good page title.
I was absolutely fascinated, actually, because one of the things you shared with us in Therapy Growth Group was the search rankings for the different types of therapists. And I thought this was so interesting. So what John did was you took the different sort of categories that the BACP do for that, the tick boxes.
Yes. Yeah.
And then you worked out how many searches there were for each of those particular aspects, weren't there? And I think anxiety therapist came up as one of the top searches. And the next one, which I was surprised about, because I've always been a bit sort of like, oh, I'm not sure if people would search for trauma therapist, but that is the second most popular search, wasn't really it?
Yeah.
I thought that was fascinating, actually. And I think the interesting thing about it is the fact that people are searching for those terms, aren't they? And I just thought that was a really, you know, I mean, for you, that might just think, well, of course. But for me, as a therapist, you don't really know that that's what people are doing.
Yeah, as I said, I think, you know, it really does come back to, I mean, I use that list with all the therapists that I work with. And some are surprised, some less so. But it shouldn't dictate what we do. It's still about our ideal client and who we're best placed to help. But then to think about how they present themselves and what they put into Google
how they search. This is the sort of interesting thing to think about, isn't it? Because when you said about me, you know, that people may well be searching for anxiety therapist, or they could be searching for Josephine Hughes. That, you know, they actually look for both, because they might be recommended and they just want to find out a bit more about you before they actually get in touch. So that's a really sort of helpful thing to know. I mean, obviously there's so much more to it, isn't there? Is there anything else you wanted to tell us about the SEO that would be helpful for people to know about?
Yeah, well, we've talked a bit about how Google search works, and I think it's really important to think about how people look for a therapist and to try and understand that. And I think that puts us in a better place to understand how they come to the website. But then once you actually get to building the website, and that's, you know, whether people are looking at improving the website that they've currently got, or they're looking to hire a website designer. We've talked a little bit about the structure of a website, but there's lots of extra things that you can do on your website to make it work better right through. So again, you're thinking about how Google works with lots of bots that come and search your website and check things out. So your URL structure, which is what you see at the top of your browser, which is www.josephinehughes.com/xyz, make sure that's meaningful. So, you know, it should be your about page, Josephine, as we talked about in the therapy growth group, is about Josephine Hughes. It's not it's not just about, and it's not XYZ123 or whatever. So make it meaningful. Think about most people when they open a page and they see it for the first time, they scroll through it pretty quickly. What we want them to do is to stop, whether they get to the bottom and then go back to the top to read it properly, or whether they sort of stop halfway down and something catches them. So we want to structure things well. We want short paragraphs. We want lots of headings. Every website is made up of H1, H2, H3 headings, with H1 being the most important. Each page should only have one H1 heading. As a quick rule, an easy rule for people, that should probably be the same as the slug. So your about page, so if it's about Josephine Hughes, a really good H1 for that page is about Josephine Hughes, or about Josephine Hughes in I know you're not in Portsmouth, but in Portsmouth, whatever, I keep coming back.
Yeah. This is something that, you know, as a complete beginner, I can remember working with my web designer, and I did a blog. And, you know, I'd been going through sort of doing bold headings and that sort of stuff. And I said, oh, yeah, my headings are there. And she looked at them. She said, no, they're not. Because you can actually set them up. You tell your website, don't you? This is an H1. This is an H2. This is an H3. And that's something that you have to actually select. This is an H2 heading. This is where I work on WordPress anyway. When I'm doing a blog, you know, I'll select this level of heading. And that's what people need to do, isn't it? Because just having something in bold, the robots can't read that. You need to tell them this is a H1, this is an H2 thing.
This is important. Yeah, you need to help the bots as much as possible. And that goes for images as well. So if we upload an image, giving it a sensible name. So, you know, most images, if we just pull them out of our, on a file on our computer, sometimes have some very random names.
Yeah.
Give them, you know, a meaningful name. You know, if it's your headshot, so, you know, if it's my headshot, I would probably just call it John Garrowell, and that would be my headshot. I might use John Garrowell Verum Design, but I would give it a sensible name. Images also have an alt tag. Alt tag is principally for accessibility reasons. So if someone can't see the screen and they're using page readers, can read all the text, but then it will get to an image. And for that person who can't see the screen, if it's got good alt text, they will understand what that image is about. So don't forget to add that and just explain what that is. That also helps Google, just gives them an extra little bit of information.
So that would sort of say something like it was your headshot, a photo of John Garrowell from Verum Design, something like that. And it's just sort of like giving them more information, isn't it? And their bots then will be even more convinced that this is your website.
Exactly.
And this is who you are.
I get also on that, sort of a further point, Google has way too many acronyms, but NAP is one that they talk about a lot, which I think is important. Mm-hmm. NAP is name, address and phone. Mm-hmm. Google looks for signals and sort of whether people are genuine and consistency. So on your directory profiles, on your website, on every single page that you have, on your LinkedIn profile, wherever you put your name, address and phone number, make sure that they're all exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And use the same format as well. So those bots can automatically see, right, okay, here's someone who's on the BACP directory. This is their website. They're also part of this group practice over here, and they're part of this group over here. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of sort of ticks then next to your name as a therapist that you are who you say you are. Google wants to show the best pages for each person.
It's just making sure that it's showing people what they want, so they'll sort of carry on using Google, really, isn't it? And so, you know, the question that comes up at this point is, do I have to include my address and phone number? Does that make a difference? Would it help? Because, you know, people are quite nervous about having their phone number online, or, you know, they worry about clients turning up, just knocking on the door, sort of thing, if they haven't, you know, got an appointment. So is it something that really disadvantages us if we don't have our address and phone number?
I think that the best scenario is you have a separate address and a separate phone number, and you do use all three and consistently everywhere. Yeah. I think that's kind of the best scenario. That's not always possible. A lot of people don't want their phone number at all. Then leave your phone number off everywhere. If you're worried about people knocking on your door, and that's, you know, it's a very genuine, real concern, isn't it? I would suggest you still use your address, but maybe leave off your house number, so it shows your road, the location and the postcode. And again, just be consistent everywhere.
That's helpful. Thank you. So what sort of the common mistakes do you think that people make, you know, in terms of their websites and SEO?
I guess one of the easiest ones, and I say this sort of, you know, someone who designs websites, is to do it on I would look at a really big screen. People would design their website on a really big screen. It's got to work on a phone for two good reasons. The first is, more people look at websites on phones than they do on a computer nowadays. So that's how people will see your website. And also those Google bots that we keep talking about, they do all their crawling on the mobile version of your website.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Yeah.
So I see some websites that just don't scale onto phones, or they work very, very slowly on phones.
Yeah.
Or they have some even content that's just turned off and doesn't appear on the phone screen. That's definitely to be avoided.
And that would sort of slow, that would make you go be further down the ranking, would it?
Really make things difficult. So most sort of web designers today are sort of very aware of that. I think some give it more attention than others, but whoever you're working with, or whether you're doing it yourself, keep having a look at your website on your phone. Look at every page, check that the text doesn't run off the edges, check that it's all readable, and, you know, it's of appropriate size. Size and color are also super important. Accessibility, Google does look at and care about for SEO, and it's important that people can read what we're writing, stating. I mean, it's amazing how many websites I see where you've got what can be an attractive image and what can be important words, but you've got pale blue text on a blue background. And it's too hard to read. I mean, for web designers, for myself, I've got sort of various bits of software that I use that tells me sort of contrast ratios for every sort of bit of text everywhere on the sites to make sure that it's good enough, and people with any difficulty seeing things can read it easily.
Yeah,
and it's big enough. It can be a problem on mobile.
Yeah, it's interesting actually, because sometimes, you know, we'll see people's websites because they'll come in and we'll do a marketing review together. And one of the things I notice is people can choose like a background colour, can't they? And then put a sort of contrasting colour over the top. And I think that can sometimes be really difficult to read, actually. That's the sort of thing you're talking about. Yeah, interesting.
I think it's like 1 in 8 men have a some sort of colour blindness to some degree. And it's 1 in 200 women. So I there's a lot of people out there who, you know, are able to read sort of websites in to most degree, but how we design them makes it difficult.
Yeah.
Get it wrong for a lot of people.
Yeah. And do you think websites go out of date? Is that something that happens?
They do. I'd love to say not, but I think in the same way as, you know, the cars and the tech and all the phone, you know, all the technology that we use, they do have a shelf life. I think it's important to keep your website updated. So I think if a website is, you know, the foundations are right and the structure is right, you can keep that updated. You can keep all your plugins and the security details right and sharp. And you can make sort of small design changes along the way. I think 5 years is a reasonable time for a website to still look good.
Yeah, it begins to look dated, doesn't it? Because designs change, I think, after a while.
Designs change, and you know, people change their hardware, so people will have different phones that are different size screens that maybe a higher resolution or offer different things, and the technology keeps changing. So, you know, a website that was designed 5 years ago probably wouldn't have a set of code that I'd put behind websites called Schema, which again helps the bots and helps find your website, helps understand sort of the detail and data in the background.
Yeah. I was going to say that's important for the AI as well nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah.
The schema in the background, which we won't go into because it's sort of technical, but basically it needs to be there, doesn't it? So to help you get found. And when speed as well, that's another thing, isn't it, about the loading speed and that sort of stuff. That's quite important, I think.
Yes. So it's relatively easy to get a decent load speed on a computer. But again, going back to what we were talking about earlier, mobile phones, sometimes the signal's not as good. They can be much slower. WordPress, I work exclusively in WordPress, is very good on phones and desktops for that, if it's structured correctly. Wix is less so on mobile. Squarespace is okay. And then sort of, you know, Drupal and Joomla and various other platforms as well, which are okay, but tend to sort of go more down the techie route. But yes, the page speed is super important.
I'm still really interested to hear your view there about Wix, actually, because a lot of therapists will choose to use Wix because it's fairly straightforward, I think, for non-techies to use to set up. But you think it doesn't work quite as well on mobile?
Yeah, it does tend to be... It is slower on mobile. I mean, it's super easy to use, which is fantastic. So I think... quite often for a therapist who's super keen on doing it themselves but they're not that techy, then it's an okay choice to go for that. But all that to make it super easy to use, that you're just sort of clicking things and moving around, that comes with a lot more code, which takes more time, so the website is slower.
No, that's really interesting to hear that. I didn't know that.
One thing that's helpful, I guess, for everyone, whether you're on Wix or WordPress or you know, or whatever, is use appropriately sized images. You know, your images can be small, and I don't mean sort of the dimension measurements, I mean the file size.
Yeah, sort of resolution.
For in most cases, if they're appearing fairly small or on a phone, they can be pretty tiny. A small image loads so much quicker than a big file.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's quite an easy sort of quick win.
Yeah, and it, you know, because we all get fed up with websites if they aren't loading. We just click off, yeah. don't we? If it yeah. doesn't load straight away, we just give up. So sounds like the bots are the same.
Yes, yeah, no, yeah, they are. I mean, if you imagine that these little bots, that they have millions of pages to crawl and to look at, that if one takes too long, they give up very quickly and they don't come back.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah. So it's really important. Speed's important. Yeah. Is there anything else do you think that we need to know, that sort of quick wins, do you think?
So, yeah, sort of going right back, we've talked about sort of Google business profiles. We've talked about sort of a bit about the structure of your website and getting those foundations right. I think it's so much easier to build a website from the ground up that is well-structured and will work for SEO and kind of makes a lot of these problems and issues go away, rather than fixing something that sort of has got problems and issues. It's also, I'd say, it's important that for most therapists, rather than thinking, all right, okay, well, I need to start changing what I've already got, try not to change what you've already got, because that will often confuse Google, but build on what you've got instead. So instead of thinking, I'm going to change this URL and I'm going to change all this different detail, the next blog post that you write, think about your URL for that, think about your headings, think about breaking that down, think about smaller images and all of those things that we've been talking about, and sort of building on that.
Yeah, I'm just mentioning blogging there, because we haven't talked about that, have we? I mean, it's really useful to blog as well, isn't it, for because the Google, it's sort of like it needs to know that you're still there, I think. You're alive and kicking.
Yeah, I mean, you've talked about Google as sort of, you know, it's a hungry beast. It loves new content. So, yeah, if you're writing a blog and you're uploading different content, that's really helpful. I think it's different for everyone. I work with some therapists who love writing and want to put words up on the website and to share different things. And for others, it's so not what they want to do.
And that's fine too. I want to be counselling, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not the be-all and the end-all, but if you're happy doing it, great. Get regular blogs up there. Mm-hmm. And within those blogs, if you link to your specialty pages or your about page, that helps to tell Google which are your most important pages. So, keep that there as well.
Yeah. And John, I just want to sort of say at this point as well that, I mean, what you do is you help people with their websites. And I think you're also aware of therapists often don't have a lot of money to invest in websites.
Yeah. Yes.
And you do actually, you know, your service includes, is sort of, you recognise that, don't you, in the service that you offer, so that you offer sort of like a lower cost way of doing a website, don't you? You'll help people build their website, but using, I think, templates, don't you? So that makes it more affordable for people.
Yes. So it's in terms of, I mean, I've got sort of various costs and bills that I have to pay, but a lot of it is time. So I've built sort of a set of templates that really well structured, that have all the schema and everything, all the plumbing and the electrics is done and set up. So I can then work with a therapist and we can have a conversation about colours, about fonts, about images, and then also the most important part, about the actual content. So you have that template and it is really just that. It's a boilerplate almost, that we then change everything. But for me, it makes things much, much quicker to get to a really good website, which means I can charge less.
Yeah. Yeah, which is great. So again, just to mention that John's website will be in the show notes. So, you know, we're just sort of reaching the end of our time together. If someone listening today wants to do just one thing to improve their online visibility, what would you suggest?
One thing, this is always a hard thing.
I know.
I'm going to be a bit naughty and I'm going to give you three things.
Okay, that'd be great. Yeah.
So the first thing is I would take an element of what we talked today and just think about how you can edge yourself up in SEO, how you can get found by Google that little bit easier. That could be your Google business profile. It could be an extra blog. It could be better headings. Could be, so, you know, lots of different things that we've spoken about today. The second part is what you write and how you connect with people and that ideal client, and just thinking about that individual that you're writing for, what they need to know, how you can help them, and engaging with them. A lot of people aren't going to come to your website and click straight away. They want to spend a bit of time. They want to get to know you. Mm-hmm. So share that information, talk to that person, think about what they need. Mm-hmm. And then the last part is you're important. Big yourself up, shout about yourself, and give people, you know, a button to click, a contact form to reach out. So helping people find you, helping them understand what you do, and then that last part is just making that little bit easier for them to make that first contact point. So yeah.
And it's often the bit we forget about, isn't it?
Yeah.
Making sure that it's easy for people to contact us.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just sort of think that they'll find us. We don't realise we actually need a button or something like that that says contact me.
It's making it easy for people. I mean, people will arrive on a therapist's website with, you know, for lots of different reasons, and, you know, they'll be in very different places. Yeah, just making it easy. It's amazing how many people will scan through something and then think, oh right, okay, no, I can't find the button, or I'll do this later, and then later doesn't happen.
Yeah. Do you think there's anything people can do to sort of, I can't think of the word. I want to say entice, but that doesn't seem a very sort of therapist word that we would use. But, you know, to help people avoid just moving away and leaving it for another day, is there any way of making that sort of call to action more compelling for people so that they will actually make contact?
Yeah, absolutely. It is about making it as easy as possible and reducing barriers. Talking about a you know, whether it's 20 minutes, whether it's half an hour of free time where you can discuss with someone, and giving them an idea of what that conversation will look like and what you'll cover, and that they can ask questions. And it's really hard reaching out for that first time, sort of empathizing with that. Just the think about the different barriers. So empathize with how difficult it is. That first conversation is free. You can answer all their questions. They can understand a little bit about you, what you do, what you don't do, how you can help them. And you can have that conversation. They're not making any commitment with that. And then offering a button and a contact form to just to take that next step.
Yeah, so it's sort of like they've got, it's not making that final commitment to, I will be having therapy, but I can find out more about it. Yeah.
Yeah, little steps, as you know, it's.
Yeah, it's really helpful. Thank you, John. As I said earlier on, if you want to go a bit deeper into this whole subject of SEO, John's already shared a really lovely session on how to improve your SEO, and that's in Therapy Growth Group, and it's available now for anybody who would like to know more. And obviously, if you're thinking about your website, and like John said, maybe it's time to start from the ground up, you can find John's details at verumdesign.co.uk. So thank you, John, so much for coming in and helping us, because I know it's sort of like a real sort of passion project for you, really, isn't it? Is to help make it easier for people to find therapists. And thank you for, you know, all the work you do.
My starting point was, to make it easier for people to find therapists. And I'm still learning so much about the world of that therapists operate in and what they do. So for anyone that's still got questions or whatever, obviously your therapy growth group that I'm finding it difficult to say, it's fantastic, and we've already done some work together on that. But if anyone wants to get in touch with me, I'm always super happy to talk.
That's brilliant, thank you. I think our missions are very sort of like close, really, because that's exactly what I want people to do is help therapists get in front of more people so that more people can get help. So really I appreciate you coming along today, John, and sharing with us, and really encourage you to go and take a look at what John does, because it's great. So thank you, John, for coming along.
No, thank you for inviting me on. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening. do come and join my Facebook community, Good Enough Counsellors. And for more information about how I can help you develop your private practice, please visit my website, josephinehughes.com. If you found this episode helpful, I'd love it if you could share it with a fellow therapist or leave a review on your podcast app. And in closing, I'd love to remind you that every single step you make gets you closer to your dream. I really believe you can do it.